Welcome back. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EAA Radio, the voice of EAA. I am Magneto Mel here with Amy Laboda, and we have another guest in the studio today, Matt Thurber. He's been flying since 1975 and writing since 1978 about aviation. He reports on aviation for Aviation International News and their sister publication, Business Jet Traveler. Flight instructor, A&P mechanic, you just do a little bit of it all. And based in my neck of the woods there in Southern California. So welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
And how do you get here all the way from the left coast? Do you did you fly in yourself? Or
I wish I did, and I will someday, but I can't compete with Southwest Airlines. So
that's a little tough, yeah.
Airline to Milwaukee and rent a car, and then I can drive right to my campsite.
And so is this your first air venture, or you surely have come to a few?
My first was 1978, but I've been going steadily since about, the last 8 years.
And how is this year going for you? What do you think about things this year?
The weather's been awesome, except for a little bit of rain, but...
Yeah, here we're in for a little bit more today, so...
But it's been a great show, lots of interesting innovations, and that's what I come here to see, is what's new and different.
And what have you seen?
There's a kind of a few themes at this show. This is obviously the year of the diesel engine. They finally seem to have reached a tipping point in the industry, and the major manufacturers and kit manufacturers are adopting them pretty quickly.
I think I've seen, I saw a Glassstar with a diesel in it. I saw a Cirrus SR20 with the Delta Hawk diesel in it. Who else did you see with a diesel? What am I missing?
Well, there's obviously the announcement from Cessna that they're going to have the diesel-powered Skyhawk,
right.
The Skyhawk JTA, and their diesel-powered 182 is about to be certified pretty soon. And I'm trying to think. There was another one I saw that's going to use the Austral engine.
Oh, right.
Which one is that?
Isn't that the one that's being done at Premier Aircraft?
No, Premier Aircraft is doing the Skyhawk STC.
Okay, that's the Skyhawk STC. But I know what you're talking about. Then I saw a turbine engine, a TP-100, in an RV-10.
The check engine,
An
RV-10. Last year they said they'd bring it here, and they did.
They PBS. Flew it. No wheel pants, no fairings on the struts at about 145 knots all the way here.
Well, that's great, because we need some more inexpensive engine availability in this market.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not convinced that any of these are going to be inexpensive in the beginning.
No.
However,
it always takes a little bit to get stuff rolling, though.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But they're beautiful, beautiful machines. The Delta Hawk Cirrus, they said they were being, conservative all the way here. And they were very happy with the performance with the wrong prop and a way too big scoop for air and all these things that they know they can refine and get the performance.
The only problem with the diesels is the price. We're now that they're being adopted, we're seeing what the real cost is, and it's fairly big change over the gasoline engine.
And I noticed that several companies are suddenly saying, oh, no, you don't need Jet A. We can make a no lead.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, why'd it take so long?
I agree. I mean, we've been fighting it for years. I find it admirable what Swift Fuel has been doing. There have been a lot of research done into the drop-in replacement for 100 low lead, and then all of a sudden... the big guys are going, what's all the trouble with? We can do that. No big deal.
Absolutely. I mean, there's the FAA initiative, the PAFI initiative for coming up with a unleaded avgas. But unless it's going to have to be something that's universal, and until it becomes that, it's not going to be reasonably priced, easy to transport.
Yeah, I am worried about going from Florida, where I might have one company and one formula, to, say, Colorado, where it's a totally different company and a totally different formula. And can I mix that? Those are the questions that we're still asking.
Absolutely. But right now, as an industry with so many engines that can run on existing autogas, why don't we have an autogas infrastructure at airports?
It's a good question.
Some, There are some that have it.
There are a few, but they're spotty.
Try to find one in California.
Yeah.
Not. Even in Florida, I know of one. Only one place where I can get MoGas.
And if the MoGas was available, and they say, what, 80% of piston engines can run on MoGas, we'd think of how much money and time and effort we'd be saving, and we'd actually be opening up the rest of the Avgas stocks to the engines that need it.
Well, I guess this is yet one more thing we need to present to the poor administrator. Administrator Huerta was here yesterday. You saw him in two venues. What did you feel about the presentation? What do you think? What's going on there?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people were disappointed because they were hoping that the FAA administrator would come out yesterday at the public meeting and say, hey, guess what? Third-class medicals are no longer needed starting at midnight tonight. But that can't happen, and he's well aware of that. But I believe he's trying to take steps within the framework of how it can be done legally to make it happen. I think he understands the need to do something about the third-class medical, and in my opinion, it's complete and utter lack of usefulness.
At least there's some attention on the problem from somewhere where something can get done if we take these initial steps.
Well, there was a lot of pressure for him and his administration to move on it because we were going to try and push it through Congress. I mean, we had that. We could have gotten that done.
Right, and he did make a point more than once, and I think he's right about this, and that is, if you really want a new law by Congress, go for it, because it's going to be worse than anything we can do. And not only that, once it's a law, you don't have a choice. You got to do what it says. And it might not be something you want.
He knows what he's talking about, because right now regional airlines are struggling to find ATPs to fill their right seats.
Exactly, because of a new law requiring that they have 1,500 hours and some very, very expensive training.
With few exceptions.
And that just went into effect.
August 1. Yeah. Isn't today
That's
August
today.
1?
That's what I say. That just Hello. Went into effect.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Magneto Mel's right on top of it.
But you're right. If it goes to NPRM, and this is what I heard him say in the press conference, if it goes to NPRM, you will have time to comment on it and give your feedback on what our vision of the rule is, and there's some give and some take. If it goes through Congress, you know, the law of unintended consequences is stuck.
Absolutely. And every time Congress steps into FAA matters, as good as their intentions are, there are things that we don't like. For example, in California, Rialto Airport is closing soon because Congress stepped in and said, yeah, go ahead, close it. Here's a law. Thank you for the donations.
Wow. Wow. So it's going to become what?
It's going to become industrial warehouses.
That breaks my heart the way it breaks my heart every time I fly by what used to be Meigs Field.
Yeah. Well, that's like the poster child for
well,
that problem.
Well, it's still not anything. I mean, it's half park, and then it looks like some, I don't know, place to throw tailings.
Yeah, if you're going to close the airport, do something with it that's good for the public, and don't make us think that you were just doing it because you didn't like it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, having Congress involved with the sponsorship on GAPA, though, did help push that into some, the Pilot Protection Act did help get some good attention for that. So I think we just need to steer them in the right direction.
That's true. And I think the administrator, what he has to do is make sure he is communicating with Congress to say, look, here's what we're trying to do, so can you kind of put the brakes on a little?
And keep the information flow.
If you think we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And hopefully that'll have a productive effect.
Absolutely. So you work on a lot of different publications, and it really runs the gamut in your job. Tell us a little bit about Business Jet Traveler, Aviation International News. Let's see, where else have I seen your byline?
I've probably written for, I don't know, a dozen different magazines, but right now I'm full-time with AIN Publications, and our two main print magazines serve the people who fly the airplanes. That's Aviation International News, and operate the aircraft. And then Business Jet Traveler serves the people who pay the bills and sit in the back.
And buy them.
And absolutely.
Where can people get a hold of these to check out some of the things you've written?
They can go to AINonline.com, and there's plenty of material on there, and there's actually a link for a free subscription for those who qualify. And there's also e-newsletters that anybody can sign up for as well.
Well, that's fantastic. We'll have to make sure everybody gets in that and does that.
Isn't BJT a link from that site too, Business Jet Traveler?
You can link to Business Jet Traveler from that site or go to bjtonline.com.
Super.
Great.
bjtonline.com. And you're out of here. You've done your 5 days in the campground, right?
That's right.
You're out of here today. We're going to miss you this weekend, Matt. Matt Thurber. Right?
Yeah. Thank you very much for being here with us today. And we're going to have to go to a quick break here, and then we'll come back with some more aviation news and guests here on EAA Radio, 96.5 FM, 1210 AM.